W248DE, broadcasting at 97.5 FM.
From Lake Wazeecha and beyond, your news, talk, and sports is locally grown radio, 97.5 FM and WFHR 1320 AM.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by Rocket Mortgage.
I'm Stacey Lynn in Washington. Longtime soccer journalist and CBS sports contributor Grant Wall collapsed and died while at the World Cup in Doha yesterday. Here's correspondent Peter King.
Grant Wall was covering the quarterfinal between the Netherlands and Argentina when he collapsed last night in the press box at a stadium in Qatar. On Tuesday, the 48-year-old CBS sports contributor had written he was on antibiotics for bronchitis, an illness that has spread widely at the World Cup.
That was Roxanne Berry in Doha. It was the eighth World Cup Wall was covering. He was only 48. Brittany Griner's out of a Russian prison and back in the U.S. Jonathan Franks of the group Bring Our Families Home says the transition isn't going to be an easy one.
When you haven't been able to make your own choices for quite some time, it takes just a minute to get your confidence back.
Another former Minneapolis cop has been sentenced for his role in George Floyd's death.
He was sentenced to 42 months in prison with credit for 84 days already served.
J. Alexander King kneeled on Floyd's back, contributing to his death. CBS's Allison Keyes reports on the deteriorating conditions now in Haiti.
People are afraid to leave their homes.
That's Gerlene Joseph at the Haitian Bridge Alliance talking about the terrifying climate of gang violence, starvation, gang rapes, and disease that is ravaging Haiti. Joseph says the expansion of the Temporary Protected Status Program is giving tens of thousands of Haitians living in the U.S. the chance to live and work here legally without fear of deportation.
Every dollar that is sent to Haiti is another way to help their families back home survive.
There's been another major oil pipeline disruption. Our Jim Crisula with details.
The Keystone Pipeline that carries oil from Canada to the Texas Gulf Coast is shut down after a spill in northeastern Kansas. It's being called the biggest onshore crude oil leak in the U.S. in more than 9 years, and by far the biggest in the history of the vital pipeline.
The FBI is investigating the power grid attacks in North Carolina and South Carolina this past week. Former investigator Scott Sweeto says they recovered some evidence which may help.
A lot of people don't realize that you leave DNA on shell casings when you're loading magazines.
A couple of big cities are suggesting you mask up again because they have an increase in COVID cases. While it's not mandatory, health officials in New York also want kids to cover up in schools.
It can't hurt. I'd rather my kid not get sick than protect her friends.
Yes, it does seem like everyone is sick right now with something. Health officials say this is the worst flu season in nearly a decade. RSV cases are also up, and many hospitals all across the country are overloaded. This is CBS News.
This hour's newscast is presented by Rocket Mortgage. When you need cash out of your home and a simple way to get it, Rocket can.
Let's see, if something costs less, but people are happier with it, that sounds like something to look into, and that's MediShare. Maybe you've heard switching to MediShare to pay for healthcare can save the typical family $500 a month. And that's huge, but it's also true that people are way more satisfied after making the switch, too. The customer satisfaction rate for MediShare is double that of the typical health insurance plan. Double. MediShare works. It's been around for more than a quarter century, and members have shared more than $3 billion of each other's bills. People love having telehealth and a huge nationwide PPO network. So, yeah, you can save a ton and like it better. Imagine being happy with how you're taking care of your health care. So if you're self-employed or part of the gig economy, or you just want a plan you're happy with, you can call right now and get a price within 2 minutes. A very, very smart use of 2 minutes. Here's the number you need. 866-88-BIBLE. That's 866-88-BIBLE. 866-88-BIBLE.
Hello, music lovers. Tim the Polka Guy here to let you know the Sunshine Polka Party Variety Show is moving to a new time slot, 12 noon every Saturday. So join me for the best in old-time music every Saturday at 12 noon right here on the new WFHR 97.5 FM and AM 1320.
For Civic Media, I'm Melissa Kay with your local news update. Following is a list of upcoming meetings in the listening area for Monday, December 12th. In Wood County, the Public Safety Committee will meet at 9 a.m. in the courthouse. The Joint Legislative Committee will meet at 9 a.m. at the Central Wisconsin Airport in Mosinee. The Citizens Groundwater Group will meet at 2 p.m. at the River Block Building, and the North Central Community Action Program Incorporated Executive Board of Directors will meet at 6 p.m. by teleconference. The Stevens Point Joint Review Board will meet at 3 p.m. in the City Conference Room. The Transportation Commission meeting will take place at 4:45 at Central Transportation. The Portage County Personnel Committee will meet at 6 p.m. The Public Policy and General Government meeting will happen at 6 p.m., followed by the Finance Committee Agenda meeting at 6:10, and the Board of Public Works meeting at 6:35 p.m. In Adams County, the Property and Recreation Committee will meet from 2 to 4 p.m., and the Health and Human Services meeting will take place from 4 to 5:30 p.m. And that's the news update on your locally grown radio station.
Here's your forecast from locally grown radio, WFHR. Snow likely this afternoon, otherwise overcast. Highs level off around 34, southeasterly winds 5 to 10 miles per hour. Cloudy skies expected again tonight, mixed precipitation possible at times, lows level off around 28. Cloudy skies expected tomorrow, highs level off around 35. A dusting of snow today. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki. Currently, it's 32.
Stop surfing the dial. You've found the greatest radio station ever. Locally grown radio, 97.5 FM and WFHR, 1320 AM.
With Jim Santel.
You don't know me, but I'm your brother.
Sampling the news desserts of the week, here is your host, Jim Santel.
Good morning once again. Welcome back to our second hour on this Saturday, December 10th, our weekly analysis, our discussion, our review of stories, the big stories in law and government and justice in America. We spent most of the first hour talking about these two major Supreme Court cases that had oral argument before the nine justices just this past week, Moore versus Harper, having to do with this ISLT theory. That implicates the role of courts in election disputes. And then second, this case called 303 Creative versus Alanis, having to do with the claims out of the state of Colorado that a website provider can discriminate against the LGBT potential customers out there based upon a belief that the same-sex marriage of potential clients of hers is wrong. And again, the Supreme Court, looking at both of those cases, probably going to be issuing its opinions in them sometime in May or June of this coming year. With respect to this 303 Creative versus Alanis case, again, a fairly strong indication that a majority of the members of the Supreme Court are inclined to issue some decision in favor of the web designer who is opposed to same-sex marriage and refuses to engage in commercial transactions based upon her belief that she's got this free speech right under the First Amendment to create websites celebrating same-sex marriages, she says, would be contrary to her faith, despite the state law that prohibits discrimination based on sexual orientation. So that coming out of the Supreme Court, we're not certain. It's always difficult to know with clarity. But in that particular case, unlike Moore, where there's a bit more sense that there may be five justices who are willing to get rid of this unfounded theory about courts and about the exclusive prerogative of state legislatures to decide federal elections, unlike that case, the case involving the same-sex marriage prohibition, if you will, imposed by this website designer in Colorado, that one appears to be headed toward a ruling in favor of that web designer. We'll see. We'll see what comes out of that, hoping once again that whatever the Supreme Court does, it is narrow and specific such that the important work that has been done in the area of affirming and reestablishing, if you will, the rights of all Americans to enjoy life and liberty are not compromised. We know, as I discussed right before the break, that in Obergefell versus Hodges, the Supreme Court did in fact acknowledge that there's a constitutional, again, a privacy right for same-sex couples to marry. And as a result of things said by at least one Supreme Court justice, in the all-important case of Dobbs of this past June. That is Clarence Thomas suggesting that, privacy rights in other areas might also be the subject of renewed attention by the Supreme Court, specifically identifying same-sex marriage, the subject of this case in 303 Creative, that all of that prompted the Congress this past week to do something very significant. Again, walking across Capitol Hill from the United States Supreme Court to the United States Congress, where you know what happened. Just this past week, the House of Representatives gave its final approval to some legislation that would mandate federal recognition for same-sex marriages. A huge piece of legislative work. A bipartisan coalition of lawmakers, as you know from the reporting, voting in favor of this measure in the waning days of this Congress, the 117th Congress. 169 members of the House of Representatives voted in opposition to that. 258 of them, including not just all of the Democrats, but also Republicans, voted in favor of this landmark legislation, previously having passed by the United States Senate, now on to the president for his signature, anticipated probably in the coming days. The law itself explicitly repeals the 1996 Defense of Marriage Act. Remember that DOMA? That was also the subject of a Supreme Court case. This makes it clear legislatively that DOMA no longer on the books. That DOMA Act, if you will, defined marriage as a union between a man and a woman, and allowed states to refuse to honor same-sex marriages performed in other states. DOMA, of course, ruled unconstitutional by a prior Supreme Court, and now, as a result of this legislation passed by both houses of Congress this past week, also rejected explicitly by our legislature. Once the president signs this new legislation into law, the Respect for Marriage Act, will also prohibit states from denying the validity of an out-of-state marriage based upon sex, race, or ethnicity. And so, huge accomplishment. Again, all of this in the area, not just of LGBT rights, oh, that's the core of it, but also going to this issue of what is privacy rights, what do they mean in America today? What does civil rights mean human rights? And, of course, as a result of this, the Speaker of the House of Representatives, in one of her final acts, she said this is one of the capstones of her career, announced the tally very triumphantly this past Thursday. She said, "Today we stand up for the values the vast majority of Americans hold dear, a belief in the dignity, the beauty, and the divinity, the spark of divinity in every person, and aiding respect for the love that's powerful, binding people together." She made that speech in the well of the House of Representatives after the floor vote, and called upon all Americans, of course, to support that going forward. The president himself called this action by the Congress a critical step to ensure that Americans have the right to marry the person they love. And so that, again, legislative action, all in connection with a lot of focus this past week at the Supreme Court and then also in the halls of Congress, having to do with the future of LGBT rights, institutionalizing now in the legislation of our nation the right of same-sex couples to marry, even as across that parking lot on Capitol Hill in the United States Supreme Court, questions about whether or not the First Amendment prohibits a law in Colorado from prohibiting a website provider from discrimination against the LGBT community. A lot to consume there as well. So we'll see how all of that plays out. We know the president's going to be signing that major's legislation this coming week. Once again, that the Respect for Marriage Act. We appreciate so much our callers on all of this. And Jean has called in this morning from Eau Claire. Jean, delighted to have you with us this morning on Morning Cannolis.
Thank you so much for this outstanding legal class. Every Saturday morning, I recommend people tell their friends. It's in a layman's language. You're explaining everything outstandingly. And it's just, I hate to even call the question because I'm learning so much. I'll tell you, I got my papers and pens ready every Saturday morning. Now, I just wanted to bring up something to you. Maybe you don't want to talk about it right now, but it's something that I have a concern about, and maybe you can explain or bring up in the future. And that is, The House Committee on the Judiciary this week on December 8th held a hearing of the Undue Influence, Operation Higher Court, and Politicking at SCOTUS. And it had to do something with H.R. 7647, and it had to do with the influences on SCOTUS and without any rules and regulations or governance of ethics and conflicts of interest and things like that. And they had a witness, a religious leader, a Reverend Robert L. Schenick, and he was one of the witnesses about influencing some of the judges and something going back and forth. A lot of it, unfortunately, there was a lot of problems with watching it on YouTube. There was interference and things, so I didn't get all of it. But to me, it was really concerning. I was really pleased to see that the House was looking into this. However, a lot of the Republicans, especially even from the state of Wisconsin who were on that committee, didn't even really want to look at, you know, putting in some kind of regulation or encouraging the judges to do it themselves, or the Congress would have to do it. Are you familiar with that at all?
I am, and it's a great question. It's entirely appropriate, Gene. I'm so appreciative of your call this morning. I thank you for the very nice complimentary words about the civics lesson that we engage in here every morning, but especially appreciate your phone call about this because it's directly relevant to the things we've been talking about here on a weekly basis. So let's get into that just a little bit, and I will, in fact, take that on. This, again, the House Judiciary Committee, in its waning days and weeks of this Congress, the 117th Congress, we know well that with 118th Congress, as the Republicans take over, the new chair of that committee will be Jim Johnson, and he is going to be, obviously, the head prescribing what that committee is going to be doing. So before that happens, this House Judiciary Committee, still under the control of the Democrats, does, in fact, have this hearing. And what are they looking at? They're looking at, as Gene, you just so articulately explained, they're looking at this concern about whether or not there's undue influence in the decision-making processes of the United States Supreme Court. A lot of this generated, again, in the wake of the overturning of Roe versus Wade, this Dobbs case we've talked about again this morning, and whether or not there is undue, inappropriate influence by various groups, lobbying groups, other groups out there. And again, advocacy is a good thing in America, right? I advocated before that you write a letter to Justice and other representatives about things that concern you. The question is whether or not there's undue, inappropriate influence in such a way that affects those decision-making authorities. And in particular, a lot of the focus, again, the prompting this hearing of this past week, has to do with Justice Thomas and a lot of his decision-making. We're going to talk this coming hour about January 8th and some of the goings on there. We know that Justice Thomas is married to Ginny Thomas, and she has a professional career in his own right, which is not only her right, but her prerogative, as any American has. And she has advocated, for example, for the ISLT, among other things, this case coming out of Moore versus Harper. And the justice himself, of course, is going to be ruling on that very issue. And so the question is, among other codifications, other invocations of conflicts of interest and concerns about undue influence, should the justice be resolving that kind of an issue when he himself is married to a spouse who also has some involvement in the public advocacy on ISLT. Also concerns about his vote when it comes to January 6 issues and disclosures of, for example, documents in that area. And so that issue that you raised, Gene, about this committee, very important. And I'll talk more about the implications of that right after the break, including the things that Justice Roberts can and should do to address the very things that the committee was looking at this past week. Stay with us right here on Morning Cannolis.
Left corner, three on the way. Got it.
Excellence.
Yes, it counts. And a foul.
Commitment.
Drops the hammer. Thank you and good night.
For Badgers, they're not just words. They're words to live by.
It's over. Let's have a party, Badger Nation.
Nation.
This is your radio home for the Badgers.
Catch all the Badgers men's basketball action in the Big Ten this year right here on WFHR, locally grown radio, your home for Wisconsin sports.
When you're high, you feel different. You think different, you talk different, you draw different, you listen to music different, but you probably knew that. Problem is, you also drive different, and not in a good way. That's why driving high is illegal everywhere. So if you're high, just don't drive. Make a plan to get a sober ride. Because if you feel different, you drive different. Brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
This is the story of a very special woman. In a matter of seconds, she turned herself into a great mathematician or an entrepreneur. Her knowledge was limitless and still is. She could also make monsters disappear, especially those that lurked in the shadows under the bed. Once, this woman put back together a teenage girl's broken heart, which had been shattered in a thousand pieces, just by giving her a bear hug. She masqueraded as a regular person at work, but as a superhero at home. Everyone knows her as Gabriella. I still call her Mom.
Your hero needs you now, and AARP is here to help. Find the care guides you need to help, complete with tips and resources, at aarp.org/caregiving. A public service announcement brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
From the home of the Cranberry Blossom Festival, your news talk and sports station is locally grown radio, 97.5 FM and WFHR 1320 AM. WAUK 540 AM, Franklin's choice for news talk radio. Streaming 24/7 at waukradio.com.
Right before the break, I was responding to a terrific question raised by Gene, who called in to ask about this work of the House Judiciary Committee, also just this past week, on undue influence on the Supreme Court, politicking, other ways in which we may, in America of 2022 and 2023, may be concerned about the influences on our Supreme Court as they wrestle with many of these issues. Right before the break, I promised I'd talk a little bit more about Gene's principal question, which is, what can the legislature do and what can the Supreme Court do? We know that the legislature does have a role, that Congress has a role with respect to oversight of the Supreme Court when it comes to things like the numbers of Supreme Court justices. That can be changed by congressional action. It's not a constitutional matter. Lifetime tenure is a constitutional matter, but the number of justices can be changed. Likewise, of course, there's a budget. And believe it or not, the Chief Justice has got to show up to provide information to the House committees and certainly the Senate, others who may ask about the budget of the Supreme Court. Other matters, including this, and the question of the House Judiciary Committee is, do we need to also impose some rules, some ethics rules on conflicts of interest, on other matters that go to the decisions about whether or not justices should recuse themselves, should take themselves out of cases if they have those conflicts of interest. And that's what the focus of this is all about. Also, of course, looking at undue influences that may be not a part of the public domain, things we're not seeing necessarily, behind the scenes influences that would be equally problematic. And all that goes to the principal point that I would say in response to Gene's very good question, which is ultimately the Chief Justice does have rulemaking authority. We have talked in the past about the fact that the United States Supreme Court is bound by some federal laws, but not nearly the breadth of the ethics laws that the lower courts, the circuit courts, the district courts are. The Chief Justice, plainly, not only in connection with the matters involving Clarence Thomas and the role of his wife in these various issues, January 6th, the ISLT, other matters out there, issues related to even the disclosure of the Dobbs opinion long before it was released formally by the Supreme Court. all these issues, raising concerns and questions about conduct and behavior of Supreme Court justices or their staff or somebody affiliated with them. The Chief Justice, as the Chief Justice, does have authority to establish rules and regulations. He is also in charge of something called the Administrative Office of United States Courts and could, in fact, through that mechanism, establish some kinds of ethics rules that are exactly the same kinds of things that this House committee is looking at. We will look to the Chief Justice as he wrestles with these public concerns about the Supreme Court. One of the important things that Justice Roberts can do is to wrestle with those, come out with some clear articulations of conflicts rules that, again, prohibit justices from engaging in discussions about and adjudications of decision-making of cases in which they have some personal, private, individual interests. So lots to unpack there, but appreciate very much the call from Gene. We also appreciate Joe calling in this morning from Madison. As always, Joe, thank you for your being a part of our discussion this morning.
Thanks very much. I agree with Gene's sentiments. It's just absolutely invaluable to get your perspective on these legal matters and your thorough teaching of us, of how this goes. I would like to return to the subject that you were taking up in the first hour that had to do with a web designer in
yes.
Colorado who did not want to supply her services to same-sex couples or wedding web design services to same-sex couples, and Colorado was and she decided that this would be an infringement of her First Amendment rights if she were forced to do so by the state of Colorado. I am really not understanding how the First Amendment right could apply in this situation, and I would offer two other cases that where a person might want to take the same stance and see what your thoughts are. A financial advisor says, I don't like same-sex couples, so I'm not going to offer my financial advice services to a same-sex couple. Would they have the right to do that? That's speech. He's talking to somebody in how the material that he presents to a couple is presented in a certain way based on his experience and his knowledge and his thoughts about how that should be presented. A band is playing in a nightclub, and they are adamantly anti-same-sex couples, and they feel that their words that they are sending out in their songs should only be heard by straight couples. How on earth are they going to parse this out? I just don't see how you're going to come, how they can possibly get into people saying, I just won't present my stuff to same-sex couples, my services to same-sex couples, without just igniting a storm here, a firestorm. I'd be interested to hear your thoughts
Absolutely.
On those two examples and how that might play into this particular situation.
Sure.
Thanks, Jim. Really appreciate it.
Joe, thank you for the call. It's always very thoughtful and pointed. And, you know, Joe, you should be the kind of person who's arguing these cases before the Supreme Court, because hypotheticals are what these are all about, right? If we make a decision here, what is the implication, as you've indicated, for example, for financial advisor? Somebody in the arts, and yes, indeed, there's some artistry aspects to this case, this Elena's case, as well as Justice Kagan said. What are the implications beyond just this narrow case and just beyond Colorado itself? Obviously, many other states have equal types of provisions that prohibit discrimination based upon immutable characteristics, including sexual orientation, gender identity, all those other things that have always been prohibited under our civil rights laws. Follow up and reaffirm your absolute concern about this. I join in that. And again, note that from my perspective, that these things can be reconciled. Once again, we're not asking that anyone abandon their own personal private views, their spiritual views about whether or not same-sex marriage is right or wrong. That is what the provider here is saying. But beyond that, we're also asking that the entire world, including, for example, your financial advisor, including people who are artists out there, not engage in discriminatory behavior. That's what the Supreme Court's going to have to wrestle with. And my own view that is in part, the Supreme Court, as you know, has limited this to the free speech aspect of it, maybe not wanting to get involved in the religious side, but it's all tied up, right? And First Amendment rights are very much on the line here. I think, Joe, your point is well taken. We'll talk more about that, other cases, right after this break.
News, talk, and sports on both sides of the dial from Wisconsin Rapids and beyond. Locally grown radio, 97.5 FM and WFHR 1320 AM.
The Devil's Advocates Radio Show, the last segment of the day. If you got something to say, hit us up right now for your crew to tase at 844-967-2789.
I thought they were Crudy Takes.
Crudy's Takes. See, man? It all comes back around to Sports Talk Live.
Something like that.
My wife wants some vegetables for crudité.
You know what I mean?
Listen Monday through Friday from 4 to 6 p.m. for the Devil's Advocates Radio Show.
Light the lamp.
All the way down, he scores! A 200-foot empty net goal for the captain.
And defend the ice.
Driving in, centering pass. Oh, great sliding left pad save.
This is America's college hockey capital.
Fire one towards the net and scores.
This is your radio home for Wisconsin Badger hockey.
Right here on WFHR, locally grown radio, your home for Wisconsin sports.
Parents make a lot of promises to their kids. We promise to be there every step of the way, especially on those wobbly first steps. We promise to always keep them safe. I mean, nothing's more important to us than that. And now, all kids 6 months and older can get a COVID vaccine. So we've got another way to keep that promise.
We can do this. Find vaccines near you at vaccines.gov. A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
If you're talking, they will hear you.
We all want our kids to grow up safe and healthy. So we show them how. And we tell them with honest conversations that let them know what we expect. Not just one time, but every chance we get. That's especially important when it comes to alcohol and other drugs. Kids not only need to know the dangers and how to avoid them, they need to hear it often from you. And when it comes to pain medications, opioids, they need to know that they should never be taken without a prescription and never shared with friends or family. It's dangerous and illegal. So talk with your kids and guide them through the challenges of growing up safe and healthy. Because when you talk, they hear you. For more information about talking with your kids about underage use of alcohol and other drugs, visit underagedrinking.samhsa.gov.
So talk, they hear you. You can do it if you try.
No one ever made a highlight from the sidelines. Get in the game, join the conversation with WFHR's Playmakers. Call in Monday mornings from 10:06 to 11 with your sports thoughts. And Tuesday through Friday, listen in while we talk with some of the most insightful, intriguing people in Morning Magazine. Talk radio that speaks to you. Get in the game, join the conversation at 10:06 Mondays with Playmakers. And Tuesday through Friday, Morning Magazine on WFHR, locally grown radio.
For Civic Media, I'm Melissa Kay with your local news update. Mid-State Technical College in Wisconsin Rapids will return to indoor graduation ceremonies, hosting their mid-year commencement ceremony on Saturday, December 10th. Mid-State will highlight their Protective and Human Services program at the ceremony with the keynote address from Rick Anderson, Mid-State's 2022 Distinguished Alumnus and Associate Dean of Protective and Human Services. In-person attendance is reserved for ticket holders. This ceremony will be live-streamed on mstc.edu/graduation starting at 1:30 p.m. on Saturday. The Roadway Inn and Suites in Stevens Point has experienced a setback in their renovation plans due to flooding from burst pipes. City officials say a window was left open, which allowed the pipes to freeze. The hotel has experienced issues over the past few years and are working on fixing the problems identified. Even with this delay, the city is confident the hotel will be up and running again in 2023. And that's the news on your locally grown radio station.
Here's your forecast from locally grown radio, WFHR. Snow likely this afternoon, otherwise overcast. Highs level off around 34, southeasterly winds 5 to 10 miles per hour. Cloudy skies expected again. Tonight, mixed precipitation possible at times. Lows level off around 28. Cloudy skies expected. Tomorrow, highs level off around 35. A dusting of snow today. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki. Currently, it's 32.
In our lives, many other situations, and the rhetorical question that Joe asks is the question of the day. It is the question before the Supreme Court, going to be resolved presumably sometime in the next 6 months, probably in May or June. We know from not only Joe's good comment, but others, that the ruling here would be the latest in a string of victories for religious groups and other entities. The court has tended to decide in favor of religious liberty. Here, as I indicated, the court has prescribed that the argument is likely opinion is going to focus more upon free speech, but it's all tied up together. And we know that the oral argument of this past week did, in fact, implicate all of those things. And significantly, as Joe's comments so well underscored, a decision in favor of the web designer in this Alanis case would chip away at the right to same-sex marriage that was established in 2015, this Obergefell case. And we also note, of course, the irony of this, that if indeed there is a chipping away of LGBT rights by the Supreme Court, that is contrary to and in opposition to what's happening at the Congress, quite literally hundreds, maybe thousands of feet away. The United States Congress just this past week passing legislation the president's about to sign. It establishes the rights of same-sex couples to not only to marry, revoking the Defense of Marriage Act and affirming the rights of same-sex couples, their certificates of their licenses to be acknowledged in all states. So we've got a mixed bag here. We know as well that the Supreme Court, even since Obergefell, has also said that members of the LGBT community do in fact enjoy protections under Title VII in the employment setting, hiring, firing, terms and conditions of employment, that protected under the federal law for all the members of our LGBT community. What do you do about all this? Again, you write your representatives. You let them know how you feel. And yes, indeed, you can send information. You can send mail to the United States Supreme Court advocating. Let them know that you're concerned about what they may be doing in these cases. We will continue to watch all of those. And again, appreciate very much the phone calls, the observations that underscore the importance to all of us, not just members of the LGBT community, the importance to all of us in America having to do with civil rights and human rights in our future. Let's talk about some other matters that also populated the news this past week in three different areas. Mar-a-Lago back in the news once again. The United States Department of Justice seeking to have the former president's office held in contempt in the documents case coming out of Mar-a-Lago. A federal judge just yesterday in Washington, D.C., ended a hearing on that contempt request, a request by the Department of Justice to hold representatives of the former president in contempt for failing to comply fully with a subpoena, demanding that the president return fully all the classified documents that he may have taken with him since he left office. The court in that particular matter apparently decided to end that hearing without resolving that request with great particularity, apparently leaving it to the Justice Department, the attorneys there, and the former president's attorneys to try to resolve the department's concerns about whether the former president might have more classified documents at his properties. All of this, we know, comes in the wake of these other developments after Thanksgiving. A team of experts that the former president hired concluded searches in some of other locations, including the Trump Tower in New York, his golf club in Bedminster, New Jersey, and significantly, this storage facility near Mar-a-Lago. At that storage facility, we know, the team discovered at least two more documents that bore classification markings, just like those that were discovered in Mar-a-Lago back in August, prompting the lawyers in this case to find the representatives of the former president in contempt for, again, continuing to represent that all the documents have been disclosed when indeed they have not been. A strong suggestion that the Department of Justice knows that there are still more documents out there, knows that there are documents that should in fact be disclosed, and this attempt going into court, finding that the former president's staff is in contempt, asking the judge to make that finding significant in that. Why are we back in federal court in the District of Columbia? Because it is there. It is there that the federal grand jury that issued this grand jury subpoena, the judge presiding over this matter also presides over that grand jury. So she has jurisdiction over this matter under grand jury secrecy rules. We don't know a whole lot about what happened in this hearing, nor should we. But we know that Judge Howell, who is the chief judge of the District of Columbia court there, overseeing these grand jury proceedings, is taking this matter seriously and presumably will at some point be issuing a decision on whether or not to hold the Trump representatives in contempt for the continuing reluctance or simply the actions in failing to disclose these documents in the past. There's history of that and perhaps continuing to this day. So that coming out of reporting of Washington, D.C., having to do with Mar-a-Lago. We've got another caller on the line, Randy from Madison. Thanks so much for your call this morning, Randy. Appreciate your comment or question about any or all of these matters here on Morning Cannolis.
Good morning. I want to back up just a little bit. You're outlining the Moore case in the Supreme Court. Is it's finally cleared up a lot of those issues for me.
Good.
And obviously, this is the umpteenth thousandth states' rights argument that South has put forward. I have to agree with Justice Kagan when she asks, why are we even hearing these things? The Supreme Court, the cases that have made history were ones that were opening up progress. And right now, the Supreme Court seems to be trying to find areas where they can take away progress. It's like they've changed their whole identity, their whole reason for being.
And Randy, again, incredibly thoughtful comments here. I think not only joining Justice Kagan in her questioning why it is we're doing this, but you're absolutely right that this is an attempt once again to roll back, if you will, what we've understood for 233 years in America. This is how we do it. We've got courts that resolve these issues, courts that resolve facts and figures and make decisions about elections. Why are we doing this? Again, coming out in many ways, an awful lot of people believe, coming out of the 2020 challenge by the former president, a part of this notion that the states, as you indicated, Randy, the states have got these rights to do it. Courts have rights to do these things as well. They've been vested with authority, the principles in our Constitution and in the ways in which we do justice in America, all of that contemplated. Many, many other things, as we've talked in this broadcast, the Supreme Court should be talking about. Randy, along with you, I am hopeful, I am cautiously optimistic that in June we'll get an opinion that in no way embraces this ISLT and hopefully puts it to bed finally and dispositively. But it's going to be close, and we'll continue to monitor, Randy, with you and others, what happens there in the United States Supreme Court. We're also talking about other events of just this past week. The January 6th committee, very busy again as it readies its report. The chair of that committee, Benny Thompson, has indicated that on December 16th, yes, this coming Friday, this major report is going to be issued. And just a programming note here, next Saturday, as we go into the holidays here in the midst of this season, we're going to devote virtually the entire hour to what that report says, assuming that is indeed released by the House Select Committee on January 6th. We're going to take a look at what that report says, and we're going to do some quick analysis between its release on Friday and Saturday morning we're here. So tune in for that, and presumably a lot of things in that report we have discussed in the national media, in our national discussions about what the January 6th committee has done, but also perhaps some surprises, maybe some new information cutting out that report. We also know this past week that the House committee, the House Select Committee, has indicated it's going to be making referrals to the United States Department of Justice for prosecutions. Again, we know as a civics matter that the House committee itself can do two things. It can investigate. It's got oversight responsibility. abilities, and it can also do something else, and that is decide on recommendations for legislation. And presumably, this report will not only give us findings it has come to as a result of its review, its interviews with witnesses, its review of documents. It's going to, if you will, codify the results of its oversight in this matter, and perhaps also make specific recommendations about legislation that should be passed by future Congresses to ensure that the kinds of things that happened before, during, and after January 6th do not happen again. We know that some of that legislation has already been on the floor of the House and the Senate, passed by the Congress. What else needs to be done to ensure that this doesn't happen again, that the challenge to our democracy on January 6th is not repeated in January, even before, after that, in 2025, after a next election, or after any election? And so a lot of that presumably coming out of the report, we're going to be taking a close look at that. And as I indicated, one of the other things that Benny Thompson commented about this past week is they're also going to make referrals. And I will once again offer some insight into this. Referrals plainly needed when it comes to contempt. We know that people like Steve Bannon already found in contempt for failing to cooperate with the committee. We know that Peter Navarro is going to be tried for that in the near future. And we also know that the committee may indeed be making other criminal referrals for contempt of Congress. Some of the names, Donald Trump, Mark Meadows, John Eastman, Rudy Giuliani, Jeff Clark, all those people subpoenaed by the committee, varying levels of cooperation. So it may be that those referrals relate to contempt of Congress and the failures of those people to provide information and testimony. That could very well be. If the referrals go beyond that to substantive issues, so that is involving, for example, seditious conspiracy, which we've seen in other settings out there, other matters related to actual substantive crimes coming out of January 6th, the committee can certainly do that. And the mail is open between the Department of Justice and the House of Representatives, the Congress generally, but it's not necessary as a matter of procedure. The Department of Justice has complete authority when it comes to these kinds of things, as we have seen, to prosecute people involved in January 6th over and above contempt citations, contempt situations. And so when, in fact, the committee makes these referrals, we'll take a look and we'll comment on what kind of referrals these are. Contempt referrals, entirely appropriate. Those need to be done for the Department of Justice to prosecute further. Not necessary for the Department of Justice to go ahead on its other substantive charges. Again, focusing on many of the same people who may, in fact, be the subject of referrals by the House Committee. So we'll talk more about that in the future. Big news coming out of the House Committee this coming Friday and beyond. Finally, we also know that this past week we got a guilty verdict with respect to the Trump real estate business, the family real estate business coming out of the state of New York. This major case, conviction of all 17 counts, finding that the Trump Corporation, the company itself, guilty of tax fraud and other financial crimes. Culture of fraud and deception is what the prosecutors described this as. The Manhattan District Attorney's Office, Alan Bragg, as we know, led the case against these true Trump organizations, entities. Previously, that office had gotten a guilty plea from the architect of the scheme, this fellow named Alan Weisselberg, the company's very long-serving chief financial officer. Weisselberg had testified during the course of this trial, a major portion of the prosecution. In this case, of course, the prosecution did not charge the former president, but his name invoked repeatedly during the course of this month-long trial, his name appearing on checks, on other documents authorizing certain conduct that was, in fact, the focus of this trial. Among other things, jurors told that the former president personally paid for some of the perks and even approved a crucial aspect of this scheme when it came to the overall evidence of this illegality presented to the jury. Again, a conviction of the Trump Corporation. Right after the break, we'll talk more about the implications of that and then conclude. We'll go back to Congress for some other matters that it took care of early this year. Stay with us for those final comments here on our weekly review.
Oh,
Lights, camera, action. It is time for your close-up with WFHR's Star of the Day featuring Culver's. Listen to WFHR every Friday morning at 8:30. We'll play a quote from a famous movie, name the actor, character, or movie, and you'll win two value baskets and two concrete mixers from the superstars at Culver's in Wisconsin Rapids. Join us Fridays to be WFHR's Star of the Day featuring Culver's.
Farmers and ranchers have a lot of choices to make. When it comes to your crop insurance needs, the team at Ag Country Farm Credit Services can simplify it all for you. Ag Country's Optimum tool will compare thousands of options based on information from your farm, which will then be used to find the right policy for your operation. Ask about the Optimum tool by contacting your local Ag Country office. Ag Country, focused on ag, focused on you.
Hi. I'm E.J. Williams. Each year, millions of animals are abandoned, and more than a million are euthanized before they can be rescued. Organizations like American Humane are working to harness the healing power of the human-animal bond, as animals can be trained as life-saving service and therapy dogs to help veterans, the elderly, and children with special needs to overcome the obstacles of everyday life. To find out how you can help give animals and the people they help a new leash on life, please visit AmericanHumane.org.
I'm looking at the phone lines. I'm seeing some familiar faces. I wasn't reminded of Gene of Eau Claire.
Well, welcome back, Matt. I really miss you. We've been missing getting woke every morning, but now we'll get woke in the afternoon.
I was reminded of Andrew of Detroit.
Professor, it's so nice you're back. We missed you during your vacation, and I'm very happy to be in your class for the semester.
Thanks a lot for calling in. I appreciate all my callers.
Tune in to Matt Flynn Direct, Monday through Friday, 3 to 4 p.m.
This is Matt LePay, and you're listening to your home for your Wisconsin Badgers on 97.5 FM and 1320 AM WFHR, locally grown radio.
It's a voice from Beaver Dam to Kenosha, WAUK 540 AM, always streaming at waukradio.com.
Welcome back to our final minutes, our final moments together this morning on Morning Cannolis. We were chatting right before the break about this very significant conviction in the state court in New York, Alvin Bragg, the DA, accomplishing a conviction of the Trump Organization with respect to tax fraud cases, other financial cases. The question, what happens now? What happens now that a corporation has been found guilty of this felony? Well, we know that the maximum penalty it faces is about $1.62 million. That's not insignificant. And we also know, of course, that the corporation can't be thrown in jail, unlike a person. But there are certainly going to be implications for this particular entity. The Trump Corporation and the Trump Payroll Company are not necessarily quite central to the Trump's overall money-making enterprise. They largely perform some back-office functions, employing and paying top executives, and so may not hold any loans or licenses or other privileges that may slip away in the wake of the conviction. On the other hand, the Trump Organization, a collection of more than 500 corporate entities, two of them again on trial, this is significant. Being a felon, even as a corporation, could make it harder to retain employees, harder to engage in transactions with other entities out there, banks and other financial institutions looking at these two particular entities and saying, gosh, you know, we've got opportunities with others. Why would we necessarily engage with a company that's been found guilty, especially of tax fraud and of financial crime? So we're going to see how that all plays out. Even efforts to expand the company, if you will, are going to be stymied by this. Not an insignificant consequence for the corporation overall as this goes forward. We're going to be hearing more about, of course, the sentencing of that corporation, of the Trump entity in the future, and we'll see down the road about the impact of that, along with the related case involving the state attorney general, also in New York, suing for about $250 million also a consortium of those Trump companies that related to valuations of real estate properties in the state of New York by Trump officials. The attorney general there having already appointed a special monitor to oversee the conduct of the Trump organization, trying, if not to shut down the corporation completely, to prohibit the Trumps from ever again being a part of a board of directors. That, again, a part of the parallel civil case being brought and litigated by the state attorney general, her name, Letitia James, there in the state of New York. Lots and lots of things going on, lots and lots of things to take in, both in the courts and outside of the courts, the federal system, the state system, all of that happening in America. I began this program today talking about Brian Williams and his concerns about the future of America. He talked about the darkness of the edge of town spreading to the main roads and highways and neighborhoods. I want to conclude today by once again invoking Brian Williams' invocation, his encouragement to all of us to do things. What you must do now, he said, the things that should not only scare us but also inspire us to act. And I want to talk again in our last few moments about something we're going to be revisiting in the new year in 2023. And that is some other good things that happened in early 2022 in our United States Congress. Two pieces of legislation in particular, I'm going to spend a greater amount of time in the future chatting about them, sort of on the one-year anniversary of their enactment. But we know that back in March of this year, major piece of legislation ending more than 100 years of failed efforts by the federal government to specifically outlaw lynching. Back in March, the president, President Biden, signed a bill that finally made lynching a federal crime for the first time in our nation's history, criminalizing this act that had come to symbolize the grim history of racism in America. At the time, the president said lynching was pure terror to enforce the lie that not everyone belongs in the United States of America. Not everyone is created equal. He was speaking at the time to civil rights leaders and others at the time of the signing of that. He signed this law. It was named after Emmett Till, the young African-American boy who was murdered in Mississippi in 1955. The president at that time describing, as many of us know, as all of us know, the atrocity that he said was carried out against 4,400 blacks. Black citizens, our fellow residents between 1877 and 1950, lynching in America, today made specifically a federal crime, could be the subject of federal criminal indictments by grand juries and federal criminal prosecution, another thing in the quiver of federal prosecutors to address these kinds of outrageous and horrific and destructive behaviors with respect to people of color in our nation. The president at that time said terror to systematically undermine hard-fought civil rights, terror not just in the dark of night, but in broad daylight. Innocent men, women, and children hung by nooses from trees, bodies burned and drowned and castrated, their crimes, trying to vote, trying to go to school, trying to own a business and preach the gospel. All those things said by our president at the time of the signing of this major legislation, bringing again an end to 100 years of efforts by the federal government to specifically outlaw lynching. It makes lynching punishable by up to 30 years in prison, passed by the House in February, passed by the Senate in that same month. Again, bringing to a close this effort over many, many years to bring lynching into the scope of federal prosecution. Very significant this past year. Also this past year, about the same time, same president, President Biden signed into law, finally, the reauthorization of the Violence Against Women Act of 2022, bipartisan legislation once again. Passing an omnibus appropriations package. One of the driving forces, of course, of President Biden's career had been fighting back against abuses of power. That force led him to write and champion this groundbreaking Violence Against Women Act as a U.S. senator, landmark legislation that was first passed in 1994. During the course of many years, it was reintroduced, strengthened in 2000, 2005, and 2013. Each time the Congress reinitiated created, rejuvenated the Violence Against Women Act, expanding access to safety and support for all survivors, and increased prevention efforts. This past spring, again, March of 2022, the 2022 reauthorization of VAWA strengthened the law once again, a real, real accomplishment for women and for men also in America, reauthorizing all current VAWA grant programs until 2027, providing important financial support, in many cases, increasing authorization levels to ensure all of this happens, expanding criminal jurisdiction of tribal courts to cover non-Native perpetrators, establishing federal civil causes of action, all sorts of other things accomplished by the reauthorization of VAWA in the spring of this past year. We're going to talk more about that in 2023. Again, a reaffirmation today about what our Congress does in fact do when it acts in the best interests of all Americans. We're going to talk next week a little bit more about that and take on, again, this major report coming out of the House Committee. Join us next Saturday, every morning here on Morning Cannolis. Thank you once again for joining me today. Take care, everybody.
It was a normal day.
He was in some minor accident, a fender bender.
And I had this impulse to call him, but I didn't, because I thought I could call him later that week.
He abandoned the car, he came home, and he shot himself without ever talking to anyone.
When I came home that night and I found her, they told me that she had shot herself, and I couldn't believe it.
I asked if he was okay.
Taking a gun into your house for protection is a terrible myth.
Once you pull that trigger, that's it. There is no coming back.
65 Americans a day die by gun suicide. Store your gun securely, locked, unloaded, and away from ammunition. Help stop suicide. Learn more at infamilyfire.org. Brought to you by
WFHR Wisconsin Rapids, 1320 AM and W248DE, broadcasting at 97.5 FM.